Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
No, come on. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Thanks and welcome back. We are about, if not exactly, a month away from training camps kicking off in the NFL. Bills go in this year for the, let's see, actually, were they the favorite going into the year last year? They were the co-favorites, right?
It was maybe real close. Right? They and New England.
Yeah, and I think maybe they took the lead late and were the favorite going in. I started to say, it's been a long time since they were the preseason favorite, maybe not that long at all. In the division, Bills, Patriots, Dolphins, close for second, then the Jets with another new coach and quarterback to start 2021 with. Dan Leberfeld is on the Wester hotline with us at Jets Whispers on Twitter. Dan, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for doing this.
Always great to be on with you guys, who I will never refer to as Mike the Bulldog anymore.
No. No, not even this time will you do that.
No.
So, Dan, the over-under on the Jets, the win total number is 6. So that would be 6-11 this year. If they go 7-10 and cash over tickets for bettors on the over with the Jets this year, is that a good season?
I don't think so, because they've missed the playoffs 10 years in a row. So how many times can you hit the reset, make the playoffs button? I don't care if it's a first-year head coach. They've got to go for the playoffs this year. When you miss it, you miss the second season 10 years in a row, you got to go for the playoffs. So, no, that would not be a success.
Well, what's a realistic what, how much better than that could you expect them to be, though?
It's so hard to tell with a rookie quarterback. Any rookie quarterback in any city with any team, you don't know if any of these guys can do it as far as succeeding on the NFL level until they show they can read defenses, they have good pocket presence. In college, receivers are so wide open on a regular basis. The windows are a lot smaller in the NFL. So until these guys show they can do it, it's impossible. And I would say even the best GM or quarterback guru in the league, it's impossible to know whether they can do it or not. So if the quarterback, Zach Wilson, is everything they think he potentially could be, that's a scenario where he could go 9-7, 8-8, even in his rookie year, because I think he's wise beyond his years. He's a guy that played in a similar system in college. Once again, I have no idea whether he can do it or not, but there are some earmarks that he could be pretty good. So if he is, and he's a quick study, they could go 9-7. They have added a lot of really good new players.
Yeah, I agree with the point that no one knows. I mean, that's so right, and there are examples of that every year. So, absolutely. And you started to get into it there with Wilson. Dan, you've mentioned a couple things already. What are the things that, beyond what you've said, that look like good signs, and maybe what are the early concerns, if there are any?
Well, I have to say this. As far as some of these rookies now, they come in, and Josh Allen was this way also, and Zach Wilson. they come in and they have these press conferences. And I know press conferences aren't everything, but when I was a 21-year-old, I was a knucklehead. I didn't have that level of sophistication and the ability to articulate the way these guys do. It's amazing to hear a Zach Wilson or a Josh Allen communicate as far as with the press and with the public from the standpoint of the way they present themselves. They definitely seem older than they are, especially compared to when I was 21. So he seems like he really gets it from the standpoint that Zach Wilson is a process thinker, meaning that, and that's a big thing Nick Saban pushes, like, I know it's cliche, but he's really focused on the next rep at practice or the next bit of film that he's watching. He said, I'm not focused on expectations for the season or pressure. I'm just focused on this next play at minicamp. I know it sounds cliche, but that is a situation down at Alabama. Nick Saban is a guy that really pushes that philosophy. And look at the success that he's had with process thinking. So I think that's a good sign, along with an unbelievable arm. I know that arm isn't everything, but I'll tell you what. This guy, I'm like watching the practices, and the ball gets from point A to point B in a pace that I haven't seen around the Jets in a really long time, and he's got a very quick release. So when you have a rocket arm and a quick release, that's a good combination because the ball's coming out fast, and it's getting to the target really, really quickly.
How about athleticism? Is this a guy that's gonna be able to make plays with his feet? You know, it's not to imply that you can't be successful in the league not doing that, but certainly a lot of the guys who've been chosen the last few years do have that capacity. Where is Zach Wilson on that front, Dan?
Yeah, he's very athletic, and he can run. And in this offense, the Shanahan offense, and when you call it that, it's becoming the hot offense around the league with, you know, the Seattle Seahawks hiring Shane Waldron from the Rams, and Sean McVay was a Shanahan disciple with the Rams. A lot of teams putting in this offense, and this offense relies on a lot of play action, on a lot of bootlegs, and he gets out on that bootleg real fast. So that's a key play in this offense. Now, if I were the Jets, I would not want him running as much as Josh Allen because he is not built like Josh Allen. 6'4", 230, whatever Josh Allen's current weight is. But Josh Allen's built to take more of a punishment than Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson has a very lean build. He got up to 214, but he's just never going to be a big guy. So, yeah, once in a while let him run, but don't make it something that happens with regularity because I don't think he's built to be a guy that scrambles a ton, but I think he can scramble enough to keep the defenses honest.
With Dan Leberfeld here on WGR, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog talking Jets. Dan, of course, the last number of times we've spoken was mostly about Sam Darnold. It's like we're going in on Wilson here.
And Adam Gase.
Right. And Adam Gase. I don't think we've spoken since he was traded. I thought the Jets did well there. I thought, ideally, Darnold would have been traded long before, but I can see why he wasn't. And so the longer it goes on, the more trouble I think a team might be in. I thought he had to go. And, you know, they did all right. They found a team in Carolina that was going to give them, what, three picks? So I guess I want to feel you out for what kind of peace of mind or something there would be with the Jets about a Darnold trade. But I'm not sure it matters, right? Like, they have their new guy, and he's ancient history now.
Well, I think that getting that second-round pick, it was a 2, 4, or 6. And I think that second-round pick was very impressive that they were able to land that. If you had said they got a 4 and a 6, okay, that's what you'd expect in a trade like this. Mm-hmm. Because Darnold, even though he came in with a lot of hype out of USC in 2018, over the last 3 years, or his 3 years in the league, he was the lowest-rated quarterback in the NFL based on, you know, a certain number of starts. But he was the lowest-rated guy over that three-year period. So when you throw that out there, to get that 2, I thought – Joe Douglas did a great job in terms of this trade, getting the 2 along with the 4 and the 6. I expected to get, in terms of the Jets, a 4 and a 6. The 2 was very impressive as far as I'm concerned. And they had to turn the pace. They had to find a guy that saw the field a little bit, was a full field reader. Darnold, like so many young quarterbacks, was fixated on his first read and too often didn't take his eyes off the first read. Maybe Carolina can improve that. Often that doesn't improve. It looks like Zach Wilson has better field vision, and that was a category they needed to improve. There were too many plays where passes were bird dog to his primary read, and that led to a lot of problems.
Yeah, and so good luck to Darnold in Carolina. He has, I think he has good coaches for, you know, tapping into what he's capable of. It was not good with the Jets, even with the disadvantages. He's got Robbie Anderson if he needs him. So, you know, he has a chance probably.
Well, yeah, we'll see. I mean, Joe Brady, you know, was a guy that was a hot head coaching candidate, probably prematurely. He got some interviews, including with the Jets, in this last head coaching search process. But then it came out about the Panthers last year, and this was from Teddy Bridgewater, that they weren't really practicing red zone and two-minute drill. And I'm like, wow. And I think what was going on was you had a college head coach in Matt Rhule. He did have a cup of coffee with the Giants as assistant offensive line coach, but he was mainly a college coach over his two decades in coaching. And you had Joe Brady, who just had a year or so with the Saints, and he was mostly in college. They really didn't put in the things they needed to put in last year, and maybe it was because there was no off-season program on the field, there was no training camp, and a truncated training camp and no preseason is what I meant to say. And Teddy Bridgewater is a high water guy and a high road guy, and for him to say something like that, I'm not trying to hear to talk down about Joe Brady, but I was one of these people saying, oh, this is the hot coordinator. He was a genius with Joe Burrow and so forth. But when I heard they weren't running red zone drills and 2 minute drills in their practices, I'm like, well, maybe I got to pump the brakes on hyping up Joe Brady, because that was a little alarming.
So you mentioned you like some of what else the Jets did. And I imagine that extends to the draft too. But like, what about the rest of the roster, Dan? Like, where's the where are the improvements coming?
Yeah, I think they added a lot of guys that could make a difference. And this league's all about difference makers. I think it was Bill Polian who said you need 8 or 9 difference makers on your roster, guys that not just good players, but players that can win you games. And when you look at the top of the Jets draft, let's start with the draft. You know, with Wilson, if he's what they think he is, he's obviously going to be a difference maker at the most important position. But you look at Elijah Vera Tucker, the offensive guard from USC, he's going to be a guy. I mean, would be very shocked if he doesn't turn into a Pro Bowl level guard. He's got everything you're looking for. So they got him after Wilson. Top of the second round, they got one of the most explosive players in the draft in Elijah Moore. A lot of people were shocked he got out of the first round. He's going to be a big play guy for the Jets. Not only is he a fast guy and a quick guy, he's an incredible worker. I mean, his route running for a guy that just got to Florham Park, just got to the NFL, is high level already. He's a craftsman with his route running. And then you look at Michael Carter, the running back out of North Carolina, who they got at the top of the fourth round. He should have gone a lot higher, and he's an explosive change of direction kind of guy. So those four players could be important building blocks for the Jets moving forward. Then in free agency, you look at Carl Lawson. I'm not saying Carl Lawson is Lawrence Taylor as a pass rusher, but he's going to make a difference because he's one of these guys that, while his sack totals aren't gaudy, he gets a ton of pressures that wreck plays or lead to sacks by other guys. He's a powerful guy who's got great moves and plays with an unbelievable motor on every play. Carl Lawson will help. Jared Davis, an inside linebacker, very good coverage linebacker, something they've been missing. He's another guy that will help them as well. They added a lot of players in free agency, so just going through the roll call in my head, I won't go through all of them, but Corey Davis, the receiver, came over from the Tennessee Titans. He'll help. Keenan Cole, a wide receiver they signed from Jacksonville. Not a splashy player, but watching him all spring, runs great routes, doesn't drop anything, and is a pro's pro. There's a lot more players they added, but when you look at the body of work this offseason, it looks like a group that will help them win some more games.
Dan Leberfeld with us. The Jets, funny enough, open at Carolina. So they'll face Sam Darnold, presumably, in week one. Their meetings with the Bills are in weeks 10 and 18, first ever week 18. And you mentioned Michael Carter. Dan, do you think he is the starter for this team? Like, what is the ranking for you of their running backs? Because it seems like there are a few ways it could go, at least in the beginning.
Yeah, I think Tevin Coleman, a free agent they signed from the San Francisco 49ers, is a guy that's going to get a lot of carries, along with Michael Carter. It'll probably be a committee situation. Michael Carter's not a guy I'd want to make the bell cow back because he's not huge. He's about, you know, 5'8", 200 pounds. So I would use him in a lot of different roles, you know, on jet sweeps, bubble screens, kick returner, all kinds of different things, but I wouldn't wear him out as an every down runner. Tevin Coleman not only was with the Jets offensive coordinator and in this system in San Francisco, but he was with Shanahan and Mike LaFleur, the Jets offensive coordinator, with the Atlanta Falcons. So he's been in this system his entire six-year NFL career. So Tevin Coleman is the perfect running back for this zone running system, which calls for one cut and explode up the field. That's all this guy's done going back to the University of Indiana. So Tevin Coleman and Michael Carter and LaMichael Perine, I think you will see a committee at the running back position.
No room for Ty Johnson. Is he out, you think, or what?
Well, we need to see if he is a system fit. He was signed by the old regime. And that brings me to a kind of the, I don't want to say elephant in the room because people could take that the wrong way as far as this player. Mekhi Becton is a tremendous talent. But I brought up Ty Johnson and then segued into Mekhi Becton because Ty Johnson was signed for the old offense under Adam Gase. Is Ty Johnson a one-cut runner who heads up the field? I don't know. I saw him a little bit as a dancer last year, so maybe he doesn't fit the one-cut zone system. We'll see. But Mekhi Becton was picked to be a road grader by the old coaching regime. But you look at a guy who's 6'7 and about 370 pounds, zone offensive linemen are usually lighter and leaner and great movers. So this is the problem. And Buffalo, one of the reasons Buffalo has caught some traction and become a really good program under Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean is same system, same philosophies for how many years now? How many of those guys been there, 4 or 5 years?
Four, yeah, already four.
Yeah, so when you're in an organization like the Jets that keeps blowing things up every year or two, sometimes draft picks that fit the old system don't fit the new system as well. Mekhi Becton, at his current size, is not a good fit for the new system. He needs to drop about 30 pounds. We'll see if he can do it. Heck of a football player in the old system. Is he a zone offensive lineman? I don't know. So Ty Johnson, Mekhi Becton, there's several players you need to see if they fit the new schemes on both sides of the ball. Like a defensive tackle, Nathan Shepard, a big tie guys, you know, tie up two lineman kind of guy, but not twitchy. They're looking for guys to shoot up the field now. Will Nathan Shepard fit, picked by the old regime? I have no idea. So a lot of those kind of questions need to be answered in training camp.
Dan, as I alluded to early in our conversation, you know, a lot of what we talked about when we would talk with you was Adam Gase and just like how that seemed to be unraveling for him. How about just the overall on the new coach, Robert Saleh, and just you know, juxtaposing him starting out here versus the Adam Gase years?
Well, let me just say this. I don't know how he's going to do, but I can't say in his press conferences because they were all on Zoom, unless that's accepted language now. In the press conference, since everything's on Zoom. But I was participating in all his press conferences, and this guy is extremely bright. This guy is a Mike Shope level intellect.
Oh, my.
Oh, look at that.
He's sure to smash, isn't he? Saleh.
No, he is. Seriously, this guy is smart. If you guys have a chance, just if you have a few minutes, watch some of his press conferences. This guy is extremely bright. And these jobs, if people think of football kind of as a Neanderthal sport, a bunch of guys banging heads and tackling each other. First of all, to be an NFL quarterback, you need to be a borderline genius to process what you're looking at. And as to be a head coach with all the things you have to think about during the week and during games, and I think this Robert Saleh is extremely intelligent and up to the mental challenge of being an NFL head coach.
Dan, any questions for us today? Maybe not. I mean, don't feel any pressure, but
I think this might have been the same question I asked you the last time because I heard Mr. DiBiase's update and the Zach Wilson, the Josh Allen contract talks, and you know how I feel about that. I don't want to take any money out of Josh Allen's pocket, but one superb year, excellent year. I don't know if I'm going $42 million yet.
Yeah, well, they haven't done it. It seemed, at least to me, I think to many, like a foregone conclusion almost after the year he had. Everybody's so happy with each other, it seems, but it is sort of buying at the peak, probably. So, you know, if you wanted to wait a little longer and see what you had, even if that's not how you're sort of describing it in negotiations, then I would understand that.
Well, look at Cleveland, the waiting on Baker Mayfield. I'm not saying Baker Mayfield as good as Josh Allen, but Baker Mayfield had a decent year last year. And then you look at the two cautionary tales from recent times with Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. Those teams, what was your expression? I like that phrase you used about buying at the peak. Was that what you said?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Both those guys got big-time contracts and then kind of flamed out when the team tried to jump on the second contract early. Once again, I don't want to take any money out of Josh Allen's contract, but I'd be a little scared to go $42 million after one outstanding year. Rookie year, okay. Second year, a little better. But one truly high-level season.
Right on. All right. Bulldog, let's talk about that some more after we get off the phone with Dan.
Sure thing.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Thanks,
Dan.
Anytime, guys.
Dan Leberfeld at Jets Whispers on Twitter. Jets Confidential is how I know Dan from a previous life, writing for Shout and editing with the Jets and also the Raiders magazine. So we go back a little bit. That's the only reason he would think to call me smart. I mean, it's been a long time since I've been smart. Just it has. The years the Raiders, have taken a toll.
The Raiders magazine was Silver and Black?
Silver and Black Illustrated.
Okay.
Yes, yep. That's right.
Who did the illustrating?
I don't know. But as you say that, I feel like the whole thing should have been like sort of comic book style because
right.
of that name. I don't think it was.
Right.
We'll talk about the Allen story with the contract speculation and also have Paul Hamilton coming up. We've got a hockey trivia question for these guys as well. So stay tuned. 803-0550 is the number here. Mike Shope and the Bulldog, WGR.
I think he's got to look at those opportunities that he has to bring in bodies and at least see what you have. I've long been concerned with the defensive tackle position on this team. I think there's plenty of reason to be excited about Ed Oliver this season and him taking a major step. We've seen that from several other Bills players in their third seasons, but I'm not sure that there's much outside of that to get excited about. I mean, Star Lotulelei coming back, I think he could be a reasonable starting one technique, but I think Vernon Butler has mostly been a disappointment so far across his NFL career. I'm not expecting much from him. And then Harrison Phillips, he's been a flashy player at times, but you know, I'm not sure that he's anything more than an average rotational one technique as well.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills, visiting on our morning show. Check it out at the Audacy app, AUDACY, our parent company, or at WGR550.com. And Joe's Locked On Bills podcast is in the family. It's like our Sneaky Joe has Locked On Sabres. So happy to have that connection when we talk to Joe, which we've frequently done.
All the Joes are locked on.
Oh, locked on Joes.
Locked
That's what
on
they are.
Joes, right. Yep.
Here is Richard with us. Hello, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Super, Richard. How are you?
Wonderful. And I can't hardly wait for the season. And I listen to you guys all the time, and I learn a lot. I'm just a regular fan. I don't know as much as most fans or you. I'm not going to pretend to. But my question to you is, after watching the Bills lose for 20 years, you know, there was a lot of seasons where, like you're talking about the Jets, you lose seven games, you have a losing season. But if you lose seven games, or you win seven games, mm-hmm. and you lose six games by 7 points or less, or 3 points or less, which we have been there, means you have to have a coach and a general manager that can fit them pieces together to maybe get three more wins the next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like not every seven-win team is the same quality, you're saying.
Right, but is that really a losing season?
Yes. Yes, but, you know, you're looking at it more insightfully, and that's good, right? Because
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, I like We won seven, we lost six, but we lost them by 3 points or less. I mean, you need a coach and a general manager that can get them pieces together to get you maybe three or four more wins or get you to the playoffs. So is it really a losing season? I mean, I don't know.
It is. No matter, I mean, any way you cut it. I mean, the league, and you referenced it, right? I mean, we lived it. Like, we spent a lot of time, weeks through the drought. This game was close, and this game, and if one play here, this play, that play. I mean, that is the life of the middle class in the NFL. It's usually different teams. Like, it's not very common for a team to go as long as the Bills went without making the playoffs. But the life of the middle class team, there's not a lot of difference between the 7-win team and the 10-win team.
Right.
I know you called it a losing season, but to me, it's like you got to get somebody in here to get them pieces in because we were close.
Well, that's just the definition of it. That's all. Losing, if you have a losing record, that's a losing season. But we know what you mean. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, and I listen every day.
Thank you, Richard. Appreciate that. You got it. Yeah, Bulldog, I was going to say the same thing. Even 6 and 10 are the same.
Right.
Generally.
Close. Yeah, right.
Field goal kicking, schedule, an injury, refs. Anything, you know? right. Calls.
I mean, it's just
sure.
A lot of things. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, where you want to get to is to a place where you've got the people in place to fit those pieces together to elevate you to beyond. You don't want to be, I don't think, splitting the difference between 6 and 10 every year. You want to get to a place where, like, 10 is the bare minimum, right? Like, a winning season is the bare minimum. You're good enough. You've got enough things in place. Your quarterback, most importantly, is in place, and you trust that moving forward, we're going to get a certain level of play from this guy, and provided we're, you know, don't have the worst injury luck or something, we should be able to clear that bar, you know, regularly. It's not going to happen every year because there is still, you know, enough things that can go wrong, and even a variance in the quarterback's play can contribute to that heavily. But you want to get to the point where you're beyond the middle class. And I think the Bills last year took a step out of the middle class. I would say, obviously, the year before that when they lost in Houston in the playoffs, they were absolutely a team that could have only won 6 or 7 games, but they won 10. Last year was a big step up. Maintaining that is the trick now, and, you know, Allen will have a lot to say about that.
I'm remembering talking to Warren Sharp last year in the offseason. We should try for him soon, I think, Joe. His book is out for this year, and I've got something from him today that I want to mention too. But one thing he said, so the Bills are coming off 10-6 last year, and one thing he said in their favor was that very few of their wins had been really close. Like, they had week one against the Jets, I know, was a one-point game, but others of their wins, most of their wins were not, like, field goal games. And so he thought that might have been, because I guess it tends to be, a good sign for a team to improve on that, and whether that's why or not, they absolutely did that. What I saw from him today is awesome. So the Giants play Denver in week one. Denver at the Giants. And Denver is favored. Would you have expected that?
Ooh.
By one, but they are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I might have been a couple points off either way. Like, I mean, I'm not stunned by that, but I might have said the Giants are favored by a small margin.
Yeah, right.
Just because they're home.
You're usually very good with those spread guesses. Right. You're the guy I want to do that.
Especially in June. Yeah.
Yeah. If somebody needs that for me for my life, I'm calling you because you're better at that than I am. But the Giants are a 1-point underdog. If they win, they'll be 1-0. And that would be the first time they would have a winning record since 2016. At all. Ever.
Wow.
They have not had a winning record for any week since the end of 2016. That was a playoff team under McAdoo. They lost in Green Bay after the boat thing.
The boat.
But they lost their first game the next year. They must have lost their first game every year since. They've never had a winning record since then.
Can you help me? The tweet, I assume you saw this in a tweet from Warren Sharp?
Yeah.
Did it have a picture of the boat attached to it?
Someone else tweeted a picture of the boat, and he might have shared it.
I did not stop long, but scrolling through, I just know I saw a picture of the Giants on the boat. And it didn't pique my curiosity enough to say, why is there a picture of the Giants on the boat? I just kept going, but I know I saw it. So that would be why. Okay.
That's why.
Yeah.
So they are going for their first winning record since 2016. The Jets, in the same tweet, Warren had, so it's what, 4 seasons, 68 weeks, right? 4 times 17. He had each team's number of weeks with a winning record in those 4 years. Like Kansas City might have been on the top. It might have been in the 60s out of 68 weeks. Or New England, well, not last year, but the Giants were at 0, and the Jets were at 2. The Jets have had 2 weeks with a winning record over the last 4 years. Jets and Giants combined 2 weeks with a winning record out of 8 seasons.
Tough football lives in New York City.
Wow.
Good thing they've got baseball.
New Jersey is just not a good NFL state. So, I like that stat. All right. At some point, I still have that hockey question I want to ask you. And I've also got a mystery guest lined up for this show, and you don't know who it is. You don't know anything about it. As far as I know. So we can maybe play 20 questions and see if you can guess who is coming on sometime soon.
Will I have access to Joe to help me with this, or does he know who this person is?
Joe does not know who it is, but as I love Joe and respect his intellect tremendously, I don't think he'll help you very much, which is a clue itself.
Plus, I'm probably going to have to call this person.
Well, it won't be today.
Oh, it's not today.
No, no, but it's something that in the offing, as they say.
Okay.
So I want to have you guess and see if you can figure out who it is. You can use Joe.
Right.
I just don't know if this is Joe's area. Pretty big clue.
That's a clue. Yeah. It's a clue in itself.
All right. It's not someone from Back to the Future. I'll say that much.
Honest to God, thank you. I was racking my brain trying to think of the best thing to say there, and that was it.
It's not Biff.
Okay.
Right. Would Biff be a good guest? The guy who was Biff? Would you want Biff on the show?
No.
I'm sorry for not knowing his name. I don't know his name.
I don't know.
What would you ask Biff?
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Do you feel like you were slotted into being Biff type characters for the rest of your acting career?
Right.
Were you typecast as Biff?
What is that guy's name? There's an
initial.
Did
you ever get out of being Biff?
Were you
Biff good to you?
Was Biff good to you? That's an interview. That's maybe one of the segments near the end of the hour.
Right.
What was that guy's name? He had an initial. I'm thinking of someone else. I'm thinking of C. Thomas Howell, who was a different actor.
Yeah, that's not him.
Like The Outsiders, maybe? Does that sound right?
Right, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Are you looking, Joe? Thomas F. Wilson. All right. The letters are the same. Thomas. Not right. I was not getting it.
Yeah. No.
Anyway, it's not him. It's not Biff. It's not Thomas F. Wilson.
I've ever known the name of that actor.
I think I should know it. I mean, that's a famous movie. I think I should know. I'm glad to know it now.
I already forgot it.
You already forgot. Anyway, mystery guest, possible segment, and NHL. Paul Hamilton coming up at 5, speaking of hockey. We'll do that shortly. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR.
Centro, Adam se queda ahí, revienta vida. El disparo, gol de Escocia!
Right on. Modric or a different goal? What was that?
That was Modric, yes.
Okay. Modric for Croatia. Croatia 3, Scotland 1. Are they through? They might be with that. England beat the Czechs. I think they're both through, and then maybe Croatia is also with that win. Not sure. They're acting pretty happy. I'm watching it. They seem... This would be an odd reaction for it. Look at that. This is not a team that's just been eliminated.
That's going home. Yeah, no.
Yeah, and they are through. That is correct. That is a very awkward reaction for a team that just got eliminated.
So, I don't know what tiebreaker they are through on, but they are listed as second. Same amount of points, same amount of goal differentials, Czech Republic, and they drew. Again, when they played one another. So they're deep into tiebreakers.
Alphabetical.
Well, even that's close.
Right. Yeah, but they're both through. Croatia and the Czechs, and England with its win. So that's probably Tudden. We're getting connected with Tudden and our fans, brought to you by Bond, Schenick & King, a full-service Buffalo law firm. Just read a 538 article about the WNBA All-Star Game.
Okay.
And the headline sucked me in, basically saying, here's an actually good All-Star Game. Do you know, you know why? Like, why is – I didn't before I read this. Like, why is the WNBA All-Star Game possibly going to be really good?
I don't know.
I agree.
I don't want to guess. I don't know.
Okay. I agree with the premise. It's that it's the Olympic team, the Olympic women's basketball team, playing against the best WNBA players who were not picked.
Okay.
So for the players who were not picked, it's obvious. Like, you're trying to prove that you deserve to be on the team.
Right.
And for the Olympic team, it, as the article states, it's probably the best game they would ever get to tune up for the tournament, is to play those players. So that's pretty good.
All right, cool. When is that event? Do you know?
No.
Okay.
The Olympics are like a month or less. 3 weeks.
Yeah, yep.
Okay. So this game must be coming up pretty soon.
Must be, yeah. But they haven't chosen the WNBA team yet, so it's not, like, imminent. They have to choose the team first, probably.
Usually that's how it's done.
Yeah.
Speaking of basketball.
Open the doors and say, come on in if you want to play the Olympic team.
Did you see the Harlem Globetrotters today?
No.
The Harlem Globetrotters executive president and general manager, who I don't have the name of offhand here, but they sent a letter to Commissioner Adam Silver of the NBA that they want a expansion NBA franchise.
Really?
Ooh.
Could that have
the Globetrotters?
Yes.
Yeah.
Could that have legs?
I don't know. I was trying to figure out if that's just a joke or not. Like, could they actually do it? I mean, those are $1 billion expansion fees. Can the Harlem Globetrotters pay a $2 billion expansion fee? I don't know. Maybe.
It's a pretty good brand.
You'd also be a third New York City team in a league that already has two.
You know what? Let me see if I can chip in. I support this. I would like to, if there's a way I can chip in and help them get to that $2 billion or whatever, and I sort of have a small stake in it, I would like that.
You might have to give up your car wash subscription.
I would. I would give up the unlimited car wash. Joe, record. I would give up the unlimited car wash to have a stake in the Harlem Globetrotters.
If they go to the NBA.
Only if they go to the NBA. Otherwise, I'm not interested.
Right.
I would give up unlimited car wash for a stake in the Harlem Globetrotters. I would. Paul Hamilton. Would Paul Hamilton do that? We'll find out, maybe. We'll talk the latest on the playoffs and Jack Eichel rumors and more. Coach watch continues, I believe. We're still looking. We're still in the coaching search period. Good. All right. Always a lot to talk about these days with Paul when it comes to the Sabres. We'll do that after the update here on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.